It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Happy to welcome Jane Bryant Quinn to the show. Jane has been writing about finance for a long, long time. She's written several best-selling books. She's got her own personal finance column and now has a brand new book called How to Make Your Money Last, The Indispensable Retirement Guide. Jane, welcome to the show.
Hello, Paul. I'm glad to be here.
Nice to talk to you. When we talk about the retirement guide, a lot of people who are under 65 are going to go, okay, well, this won't be for me. But having read the book, you have a lot of pre-retirement tips for people in here, don't you?
I do indeed. In fact, pre-retirement is probably the sweet spot, because when you are looking ahead to retirement and trying to forecast what your income will be from whatever savings and investments you have and Social Security, you need to know what you're likely to have, and then that may influence you on how long you work, whether you're going to work part-time, whether you're going to stay on the job you have now, and how you will be able to live, what your lifestyle is going to be. The sooner you know that, the better.
Is it still true that most Americans aren't coming close to saving enough?
Americans who have 401k or 403b plans, the kind of retirement plans where the money is taken automatically from your paycheck, they are in much better shape than other Americans who have gig jobs or work with companies that don't have automatic savings plans, which seems, by the way, absolutely unfair to me. It's so easy to say that if you've got a 401k and the money just comes out of your paycheck. It's very hard to save when you're a freelancer and you're trying to do it on your own. That seems to me completely unfair. But the people who have 401ks are generally much closer than most people think to being able to have enough to retire. People with other companies, gig jobs, freelancers, that's tough.
All right, well, let's talk for a moment about people who have been putting money away in some form, whether they started in their 20s or waited and didn't get into it until their 40s and 50s. With all the recent problems that the stock market seems to have been having, should these people be nervous?
No. Here's one thing that sort of drives me crazy about people getting nervous when the market goes down for a couple of weeks or a month or even a year. When you are that age, 30s, 40s, 50s, and even when you're 65, you are still a long-term investor at 65. Average lifespan, people reaching 65, is in their late 80s for both men and women. So you've got 20, maybe even 30 years ahead. Much of your money should still be in the stock market. You can buy and hold. You can leave it there. And I expect that over 20 years, the global economy will grow, the American economy will grow. And if you want to have a good lifestyle 20, 30 years from now, you need the money invested to grow with it.
So, in fact, you want the stock market not to grow now. You want it to grow later. You want it to have that hockey stick, like the climate change hockey stick. You want it to go, okay, wow!
That's right. Just keep putting that money away and putting that money away, because 20 years from now, it's going to be good for you. And by the way, I'm not an investor in individual stocks, because 20 years from now, you have no idea which stock will be good, which one will be bad, which one goes out of business entirely. I don't buy individual stocks. The way to make this kind of a system work so you have a pretty guaranteed feel that you're going to grow your money over 10, 15, 20 years is to be not only in mutual funds, which I think are the wisest buy for individuals, but index mutual funds that follow the market as a whole. Decades of research have shown that stock market index funds, boring old index funds, beat the funds that are run by hotshot Wall Street managers over time. And I've index invested for most of my life, and I'm very happy that I've done so.
All right. Well, let's talk about the other end of it, which is the time when it comes time to withdraw that money, because you got to have something to live on. You don't have your income, whether full or part-time or part of the gig economy, like an Uber driver now, but it's time for you to have some sort of income, and your investments are going to do that. How do you know how much to take out?
you know, there's a tremendous amount of research that's been done on this over the past 10, 15 years as the baby boomers have retired. And I talked to all of the key players, and it's in my book. And if you, depending on how you have invested and what your temperament is, the basic is you can take 4% of your financial assets. That would be your CDs, your bond funds, your stock funds. 4% of that in the first year you start drawing, and then each subsequent year you take the same amount of money plus an adjustment for inflation. But if you are invested in called a total market stock index fund that has small stocks as well as large stocks, you can take 4.5% when you start. And if you are flexible in your spending, you could take 5.5% or even more. So there are recipes for doing this. If you look at how you invest your money, what your temperament is, and what flexibility you have, you can have different amounts, and you can increase the amounts once you have these recipes. You decide who you are and how you want to do it.
Now, what about people who have invested in mutual funds, index mutual funds, as you suggested, outside of retirement plans? In other words, they're in a taxable account. Should they worry about the implications of taking that money out and selling those index funds and having that tax hit?
Well, of course, if you have a taxable account, you're going to get a capital gains tax. So it's going to be the capital gains tax is going to be pretty low. I mean, it's not compared with the if you have the index funds in a 401k or a retirement plan. But you know, you've got to look when you're drawing up what you expect to live on. I call it right-sizing your life. When you look ahead, people tend to say, how much money am I going to need to live on in retirement? And that's backwards. You need to look at what you are going to get from your Social Security, maybe a pension, and from whatever withdrawal rate that we were just talking about. Look at what income you are going to have, and then you fit that income, you fit your expenses into that income, and that's the way it works.
In other words, you probably have to do some downsizing.
You might. Probably most retirees do some nips and tucks. Some people do the numbers, and they find that they are actually, to their surprise, okay, and they were worried about it. Other people find they might have to do something big, like sell their house. But again, Paul, we come back to it, the sooner you know this, the better. So actually, 50s is a pretty good time to start looking at it. Shortly after you retire, or maybe you've been retired 5 years, is another good time to take another look at it and see what it is you are going to do.
You mentioned Social Security, and you know as well as I do that a lot of Americans, particularly middle-class Americans who've been taking the hit since the financial crisis of 2008, maybe they find themselves out of a job, or maybe they find that if they did have any savings, and we got a lot of people who are living paycheck to paycheck in this country.
Absolutely. You're right about that.
But the people who don't have much, they're looking forward to Social Security being that safety net. Is that going to work for them?
It is going to work for them. If you're asking me, will Social Security be there, the answer is yes, it will be there. And I know that there are lots of people and political candidates who have different kinds of plans for Social Security, but think about it this way. First, there are all these millions of older people for whom Social Security is the only income, and there are millions more for which it is a substantial part of their income when they retire. And if Social Security isn't there, who is going to take care of all of those people? Their kids are going to have to pay for their room and board and move them in, or there has to be some other kind of welfare system to take care of them. When you think about it, the older generation needs it, but also the middle-aged generation needs it to help support their parents so they don't have to.
Yeah.
So the first Congress that tries to vote out Social Security in general is not going to have a job. There's be a revolt. But I do think that for high-income people, there may be adjustments in the amount that they get from Social Security relative to their earnings. But then, you know, a lot of high-income people, they can do without it. The important thing is to have it for the middle class, the working class.
Yeah.
And it'll be there. It just will be there.
It's long been said that Social Security is the third rail of American politics. I don't think we're going to see any changes going on there, although I understand there was a change made to Social Security just a few months ago that can affect what people can take in terms of benefits.
And this, again, when we're talking about people who have more choices and higher incomes, they're the ones who use this. There was a way of getting both a spouse benefit, if you file as a spouse on your husband or wife's account, and then get your own benefit later. And if between age 66 and 70, your own benefit goes up by a guaranteed 8% a year, which is pretty sweet. And so you were getting your spouse benefit, and then you were getting your own retirement benefit, too. This has been stopped for people. Obviously, the wealthier people were the ones who could afford to do this. This has been stopped for everybody who is 62 and younger this year. But one thing many people don't realize is that if you were 62 and older last year, you still qualify, even if you haven't filed for those benefits yet. And if they were part of your financial plan, you can get it. This information is not yet on Social Security's website. So there are a lot of people that are getting wrong information who still qualify for that extra benefit, but they can't find it out. So I tell them to call Social Security's main number and keep on pushing on that, because if you were 62 or older last year, you still qualify for that extra benefit.
And your book, How to Make Your Money Last, has the details on this, right?
It does indeed. In fact, this happened just toward the end of last year. The book was already ready to push the button and send it to the printer when suddenly Congress came up with this change in the law so that they could pick up some tax revenue. And I had the first time ever in my life I was able to call my editor and say, stop the presses. Because, I know, the book couldn't come out with the old rules.
Yeah.
So I had 3 days to report and clarify and check. And I had, of course, had to be rewritten in the same number of pages because you couldn't change the index at that point.
Oh, wow.
However, yes, all the latest up-to-date rules are in this book, and it just made it by a hair.
The book is How to Make Your Money Last, The Indispensable Retirement Guide. This is Jane Bryant Quinn I'm talking to. I'm Paul Harris here on the Big 550 KTRS. Let me ask you a couple of questions about insurance, which also had to be part of the overall financial plan for people, particularly when they get into retirement. Yes, Medicare is going to be there, but what about things like life insurance? Do you still need life insurance as a retiree?
Well, some people don't. If you've been buying term insurance all your life for your family, which was the smart thing to do because you could get a large policy for a modest amount of money, it will expire at some point after 20 years, 30 years. And then you take a look and you say, do I still have people who depend on my income? And if I died, would they be okay? Now, if you're single, if you're divorced, if you're widowed and you don't have kids around anymore, you're older, you don't need the insurance. So you don't renew the term insurance. You just let it go, and any premiums you were paying, you put into savings. If you do have people who are still dependent, maybe you didn't save enough, and you think, gosh, if I die first, my spouse is going to be in trouble, then you look around for insurance that will last for life. Or if you have a cash value policy, maybe there's insurance there already, cash value there that you can continue. And I have a chat. This is quite complicated for people who have these universal policies because they don't know what to do. A universal policy is one that will not, you think it's cash value, you think it'll last for life, but it might not last for life. And most people who have a universal policy with cash values in it do not realize that. And if you have one of these policies that you think you're set for life, if you die, you know, your heirs are going to get something, you get a report on it once a year in the mail. Open the mail, look at the bottom of the page, and the insurance company will tell you there how many more years your policy will last if everything remains the same. And if you discover that you're 65 and your policy will last another 20 years, and you had intended it to last for life, then you have to get on the phone right away with the insurance company and say, how can I restructure this policy to make it work? So a lot of people are actually at risk of not having insurance that they thought they would have, and others are paying for insurance they don't need, and I do try to sort that out in the book.
Yeah, that's an important part. Whether or not you even need it is a very important question you need to think about and read in Jane's book about some of the criteria for whether you're going to need it going forward. Now, another insurance question I've got to ask you has to do with long-term care insurance, because you mentioned a while ago, you know, you retire at 65 or whatever your retirement age is, you're probably going to live another 20 years after that. Doesn't mean you're going to live a healthy life. And I have relatives who've lived into their 90s, and those were not necessarily good years for their mind and body. So that's where long-term care insurance is going to play a role, right?
It plays a role. It is expensive insurance. And so first you have to be able to afford it. If you're going to be paying premiums higher than 5 or 6% of your retirement income, basically that's going to be too much and you can't afford it. So you are going to have to rely on yourself, your savings, your relatives, and if you don't have enough money, you're going to rely on the Medicaid system. Which actually my late mother-in-law, I've had experience with that, lived with us for a few years and had dementia and had to go into a nursing home. And she had enough money to pay for, the first 10 or 11 months, I think it was. And with money up front, you can go into a pretty good nursing home. And then when she ran out of money, Medicaid stepped in and paid for her. And so if you're in a bracket where you can't really afford this long-term care insurance, then you've got Medicaid. And hoping that's more at risk than Medicare, actually. But if you are someone who you're first you have to be married, because you have to worry about, if I go into a nursing home, what will my spouse at home have? That's the situation where, and you have assets to protect and you want your spouse to have more and not have to pay your nursing home bills. That is when you look for long-term care insurance. And there are ways to cut the costs. You can, instead of having it for life, you can have it for 3 years, or you can have it without an inflation adjustment. There are various things that you can do. And I think that if you're in that bracket, this is sort of an upper middle income bracket, I think it's worth having. I have it. My husband has it. And a question to ask when you're looking for one is what the company has done on premiums for people who already have their policies. A lot of companies are raising premiums on existing policyholders very fast, and that hurts. But there are some companies, I know Northwestern is one, I think MetLife is one, it's in the book, all the names are not right there, that have never raised premiums on existing policyholders. That's no guarantee they won't in the future. But it's very worthwhile finding out what happened to existing policyholders before you choose which company you'll pick.
All right, Jane, the last thing I want to ask you about, we mentioned earlier, this is not just for retirees, but also for pre-retirees. And that category may actually include a lot of people who in the last few years are in their 50s and got forced out of a job. And now they find themselves in the marketplace, not able to find a job, or if they do, not one commensurate with their skills and the salary that they were making before. And,
absolutely true.
And so how can those people subsidize their life until they get onto Medicare and onto Social Security and onto whatever retirement benefits might come once they've taken all their 401k and Roth IRA money, you know, which they put away for what they expected to be a later retirement? What do they do for income now?
What they do for income now, if they can, is find a way of working. You mentioned Uber drivers. You know, Uber, I think something like 25% of its drivers are over 50, which I found a really interesting number.
Yep.
So you look for part-time work if you can get it. If you can't, or if you're disabled or ill in some way, you're going to go through the money you have and get on Social Security as fast as you can. But this also comes, it's important to face that immediately. So you don't just go through your money and still stay in your big house and pay your mortgage. You look ahead and say, you know, we should downsize right now to cut our costs, reduce the way we live, because then we'll have savings that'll last longer, and maybe we'll even get on Social Security and still have some savings left. So, I mean, this is a terrible situation. We all know people in this situation. But the sooner they bite the bullet and say, this is the condition, I'm not going to kid myself, I'm going to figure out how we can live and maybe live on just what Social Security offers. A lot of people do that with a very modest lifestyle. The sooner you know that's going to happen, the better.
Oh,
can I say one other thing?
Absolutely.
And that is, there are couples where they're both working and maybe one of them becomes ill and can't work anymore, and the other, say the husband becomes ill, the wife might say, now I have to quit my job to take care of my husband. But think twice before doing that, because if the wife keeps working, she can keep on saving some money in, say, a 401k. She can build up more Social Security credits, and she, with her paycheck, she might be able to pay for somebody to come in and help. So don't automatically think that you have to quit your job and take care of your husband. Take a good look at finances and see if that really makes sense.
Very good advice. Just a piece of what you'll get when you pick up Jane Bryant Quinn's book, How to Make Your Money Last, The Indispensable Retirement Guide. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Jane. Thanks for joining me here today.
Thanks, Paul.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.